in Tuscola and a new location in Lincoln Square Mall. More information is available online at Kevin Elliott, that's Kevin, ELLIOTT.com, or by phone at 217-398-9066. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Ed McManus of McManus Consulting. But first, news for the week of March 23rd, 2020. As a part of the COVID-19 stimulus package, Congress is considering waiving portions of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act as schools struggle in the face of COVID-19. In a proposal made on Thursday by U.S. Senate Republicans, is a provision directing Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos to outline any special education obligations that she thinks school districts should be temporarily freed from. The report, which would be due within 30 days, should have recommendations on any additional waivers the Secretary believes are necessary to be enacted into law under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 to provide limited flexibility to states and local educational agencies to meet the unique needs of students with disabilities during the emergency, the bill states. The measure would not itself make any changes to IDEA, but in an unprecedented move, it does open the door to the notion of watering down special education law, according to advocates. Social Security offices have closed due to the coronavirus, but help with benefits is still available. Social Security will offer assistance by phone, both from local offices and through its national number, which is 800-772-1213. And the agency said many services are available on its website. Despite the changes, Social Security said that payments to beneficiaries will continue as usual. They did not indicate when its local offices might reopen. The U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights issued a webinar and fact sheet this week for education leaders aimed at ensuring that students' civil rights are upheld while schools are closed due to COVID-19. They state that distance learning must be accessible unless, quote, equally effective alternate access is provided, end quote. Online learning tools should be compatible with any assistive technology that students use, and schools must regularly test their online offerings for accessibility, the Education Department said. And finally, according to the CDC, anyone with an intellectual disability, moderate to severe developmental delay, muscular dystrophy, or brain disorders may also be more susceptible to severe illness from COVID-19. The CDC recommends social distancing practices in residential facilities and adult day programs to prevent the spread of the virus. These practices include staggering meals and activity schedules, limits on visitors, and daily body temperature screening for residents and staff. In situations where a positive coronavirus case is identified, quarantine or closure may be recommended. The basic recommendations for everyone are the same: washing hands frequently for at least 20 seconds, avoiding contact with people who are sick, and disinfecting high contact surfaces. But those guidelines become more complicated for people with disabilities and their caregivers. People with intellectual and developmental disabilities and the people who support them need to be a part of the conversation, and protocols should meet the needs of the person and the situation facing their community. Use facts, but not fear. Watch for signs of distress that can be caused by changes in routine. Make sure hand washing and other hygiene precautions are being taken. Some caregivers might not be able to leave their own homes, worsening staff shortages. People with disabilities who cannot live independently may not be able to follow self-quarantine guidelines, according to advocates. Families should check with their care providers to ensure the guidelines are being followed, experts said. Tune in for today's live interview with my good friend and colleague Ed McManus, who will give us important information and perspective on how the disability system in Illinois will manage this crisis, and probably lots of others too. So stay tuned. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and this is Disability Beat. I am joined today by my good friend Ed McManus, who is, we've known each other for a long time, Ed. Been through a lot of stuff together, right?
Welcome. Yeah, I don't admit how long I've known you, Vicki.
It's been a while. So thanks for being on the show today. I have found that it really is not so difficult getting people to be on programs these days because everybody's home and they've got nothing but time. I'm sure you're still busily working with all the agencies that you serve and the families that you serve. So I'm really anxious to hear about all that's going on in your world. Why don't you start out by introducing yourself? I know you've done this several times before, but you never know who's listening and who hasn't heard of you or McManus Consulting.
Okay, well, actually, I have been busy, but with my having retired a few years ago and set up this consulting practice, most of my work is here at home. So I tell people I spend the day in my pajamas. It's not quite accurate, but I could. I don't have to get up in the morning and put on a suit and tie and take the train down to downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
But the last few days, it's really easy to get a hold of people because nobody's out at meetings or anything like that. So that's kind of a positive development in a otherwise terrible situation. I just can't believe what's going on, but I think that our folks are being treated very well. By that I mean the individuals who are receiving services from the state, including your daughter and my daughter, and they have shut down all of the day programs, and so all of the people who live in group homes, or for that matter, all of the people, so many of the people who live at home with their families are accustomed to going every day, all day long, to a day program, and that's all done with for the time being. And I think they're talking about the middle of April for restoring it, assuming that it's safe, and it could even go on obviously longer than that. So that means that all of those people who are typically the group homes are vacant all day long. They're not staffed. There's no need to staff them. And now all of a sudden, those individuals are home all day, and they can't really go out in outings or anything. So, because after all, we all have been told by the governor that we need to stay home, and that includes those people that live in Scylla's. So the staff of the day programs, for the most part, an awful lot of our agencies operate both group homes and day programs. So then the staff from the day programs, for the most part, have moved over to help out in the homes. And it's quite a situation. And then they are prohibiting, for the most part, families from coming to visit. Our daughter as it happens, is not near to us right now because of a situation I don't need to go into here. But anyhow, she's down in the Joliet area, and so we typically drive down there from Wilmette every other week, and it takes us about an hour and a quarter or so. Well, they won't let us do that now. We can't come visit Laura. So, and Laura is nonverbal, so it doesn't work to call her up on the telephone. So we feel very badly, but that's just the same as an awful lot of families these days in Illinois and in the rest of the state and the rest of the world, I guess.
Yeah, that's got to be really hard. I know that there are a lot of families in that situation, and I know of a few families who have actually taken their adult child out of their group home or residence and brought them back to their house so that they would have, you know, that daily contact with them, because otherwise, for a lot of folks, that's not even possible.
Yeah, it's not possible for us, but for younger families or for families who have sons or daughters who are not that hard to care for, that's a real option. So a lot of families have done that. Most of the agencies have said, if you take the person out, you're going to have to keep them out. You can't just take them out for a weekend. And so you're going to have to keep them out for an extended period. Actually, what we did last week was we our daughter's in a wheelchair, which makes it even more complicated to transport her because you have to have a wheelchair van. But mm-hmm. we had access to a van, and we were able to go down there and pick her up and take her out for a few hours. Now, I think they have clamped down on that since we did it, but that was great because at least she was stuck in that house along with her housemates, and we were able to take her out, and we went to a mall, and we had a really nice afternoon, and we brought her back. But unfortunately, we can't even do that now.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's got to be some concern about, you know, all the people that staff that group home and people coming in and out in different shifts all day long. Are you concerned at all about her potential exposure based on, you know, all of those folks?
Yeah, there's a lot of concern about that, and I don't know what can be done about that. I mean, unless the staff were actually to move in, and I've actually one of my agencies called me about that. They said our people would be willing to move in and live there for the time being, and I don't know whether that's going to be approved by the department or not, but it certainly is a concern to have the staff coming in and out, and the agencies have been instructed to be very careful when the people arrive, and obviously they have to use the proper precautions. They have to have their temperature taken, and they have to obviously wash their hands and so forth. So, but that's just what we're, you know, that's what we're dealing with. And I did do a survey of all. I have about 50 agencies that are part of my consulting practice, and I surveyed them. And there's one agency, Bethesda Lutheran. Their president is holding Q&A phone sessions, several of them, for the parents and guardians, which I think is really a nice idea, where the fretful parents like you and me can call up the Bethesda president and ask details about what's going on. So I another interesting one is Garden Center Services, which is in the south suburbs of Chicago. And they are reporting that, as we've heard from elsewhere, that there's a huge shortage of personal protective equipment, and that's true all over the country. And so then they've come up with the idea of reaching out to people who know how to sew and asking those people if they would be willing to make homemade cloth masks for their staff. I thought that was really creative, and so we got a lot of, they have a bunch of sewers out there who are sewing masks for the staff.
Oh, that's amazing. I did see something on the news about that being done for some hospitals and clinics and so forth, but you know, that the oftentimes people with disabilities become the afterthought in that kind of a situation. So that's very encouraging.
Another one that that caught my eye was St. Coletta, Wisconsin, which is an agency that we are involved in. There's also St. Coletta's of Illinois, but this is the Wisconsin St. Coletta's, but they have a bunch of homes across the border in northern Illinois. And they have a policy that if you want to pick up your family member, they say that they will meet you out in the driveway. You know, they don't want you coming in, but they'll bring your loved one outside in the driveway. And then when you bring the person back, the staff will ask you a series of questions to determine if there's any risk to the other persons living there or to the staff. So I think that some of our agencies are being very creative in dealing with this. And, you know, obviously for all of us, we've never had anything like this, and we're all kind of learning as we go.
Have there been any of the group homes that you know of that have had a coronavirus epidemic?
No, I don't know of any.
Well, that's great news.
That is great news.
So, in that kind of a situation, who knows what, I mean, is there any plan for what might happen in that case?
I don't know the answer to that, but that's a good question, and I should inquire about that. You know, I just realized that you asked me to introduce myself, and I goofed and I didn't.
But yeah, you just went right into the business. Yeah, go ahead and do it now, Ed.
I worked for the Department of Human Services for about 18 years in the Division of Developmental Disability, and I'm an attorney, and I worked in the Office of Inspector General for about a year as a lawyer. And then I ran the statewide home-based program. And then I was kind of a regional manager for the northern suburbs for the division of DD. And before that, I was a reporter and an editor for the Chicago Tribune in Springfield and Chicago. In 2011, I retired, and that was when I set up this consulting practice. So I have a lot of agencies that call me up with questions that they can't get answers from anywhere else, and then I publish a newsletter. I have a Facebook page, McManus Consulting Facebook page, so people can look that up if they like, and I have my newsletter on that.
Well, and not only do you work with agencies around the state, but I know for a fact that parents call you all the time to get
they
your
do,
advice.
And I don't charge any fee or anything from that. So people are more than welcome to my phone number is listed on the Facebook page, and my email address is listed, and I get a lot of calls, and I tell you the truth, that's the best part of the job for me, because being a parent myself, I can really identify with these poor families who, you know, it's kind of like their son or daughter is turning 22 years old tomorrow morning, and they all of a sudden realize that the school bus isn't going to come anymore. There's so many families that are kind of caught without a plan, and so then so many of them will call me up and try to get advice on. We have an awful complicated system and advice on how to navigate the system.
Yeah. And I just was, you know, pulling up your newsletter, the last one that you sent out, which was on March 12th, which seems an eternity ago.
Yeah.
But it might give us a good opportunity to talk about some of the things other than the coronavirus that are really in the forefront of your mind as things that we need to address as a community.
Yeah, the issues with the independent service coordination agencies continue. This has been going on now for a year and a half, and your listeners may or may not know that. Well, first of all, we have this system of service coordination agencies that kind of assist people in getting people with developmental disabilities and getting services from the state, and then they follow up to make sure that those services are being delivered properly. So
in
it's
this
a real
area,
important...
in this area, that would be Champaign County Regional Planning Commission.
So. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then, a couple of years ago, the department announced that they were going to. They have traditionally just kind of automatically renewed that Champaign County group and all the others. There were 17 of them around the state, and they would automatically get a renewal of their contracts. And so then the new system is they decided to put it up for bidding for the contracts and choose an agency for each geographical area. And so then a lot of agencies lost out. The Champaign one was one of the ones that was successful. And actually, I think that their area expanded. I think they got more counties, but it's been very controversial. And the big issue had to do with the fact that there was no the public really didn't know this was going on and didn't have an opportunity to be heard on it. And so now some of these agencies have gone to court. There's a lawsuit in federal court, and there's another one in the state court down in Belleville, and challenging the constitutionality of all this, and these lawsuits kind of drag on forever. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing a lot of coverage of that, and so the Champaign agency is one of eight now that has survived. There were originally 17, and those other nine have gone out of business, and the eight are still remaining. But the issue of whether they should have done this and the manner in which they did it is still very much up in the air.
Yeah, and I'm sure that all of that probably is pretty much on hold through this newest crisis.
You know. Well, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, they were supposed to have a hearing on this very issue, and the hearing just has been postponed indefinitely. So the state government is so preoccupied with fighting the virus that all these other hot issues are not so hot anymore. And as a matter of fact, that brings me to another topic, and that is that we desperately need more money in our system, particularly to pay our workers, who we call DSPs, direct support professionals, the people who work day in and day out, primarily in the group homes and the day programs. And so we've been kind of battling with the legislature for the last several years to try to get more money. And now, so we have a bill in the legislature now, but I wonder whether that bill is going to go anywhere, because there's so much money being spent on the whole combating the virus, and the legislature has recessed. So that's just an example of how state government is kind of ground to a halt. A lot of the employees are sitting at home, and these issues are just kind of being put on the back burner. It's a very odd circumstance.
Yeah, you know, I know that they've been trying for a long time to get wages risen to $15 an hour. That was the goal for a long time. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe that's not enough. I don't think it is, personally. For people to have that kind of responsibility, folks need to have consistency. They need to have security. They need to have the knowledge that they know the people who are coming in the door to care for them. And so, you know, maybe it ought to be, you know, the law ought to read something like minimum wage plus 50%, or, you know, whatever that is, so that people are getting a fair shake in, you know, doing the work that they're doing and not having to go to McDonald's to get the same.
Yeah, that's the reality, is that would you rather work at McDonald's flipping burgers, or would you rather do all the hard work of caring for a person with disabilities who, you know, who is very challenging to care for and needs all kind of help all day long? So, excuse me. So these people are—they're either not taking the jobs in the first place, or they are not staying because they realize that there are easier jobs at better pay elsewhere. So I would agree. This is definitely not a minimum wage job, but our people are only getting like roughly $13 an hour on average, and so we have to at least raise them to 15, but we really ought to raise them to over $20, like you say, because they are the people who should be deserving the best wages.
Yeah, well, at least they're not getting laid off right now.
That's true.
So there's a positive there, but you know, that does leave them exposed. They can't be at home with their families so much.
Yeah.
So that's a concern as well.
Yeah.
And what else is on your plate these days?
Well, we continue to have the Ligas consent decree, which is the Ligas lawsuit, which is filed many years ago, and which the state agreed to settle by entering into a consent decree and agreeing to enroll a whole bunch of new people. They enrolled 3,000 new people in services over a period of 6 years. And that case continues because it's still, the federal judge is still overseeing that. And the judge a couple of years ago declared that the state was not complying with the consent decree because part of the consent decree, in addition to calling for more enrollments of individuals, also said something about the quality of the care. And, you know, this gets more and more complicated, but we were just talking about the low pay of the workers. Well, as a result, we have a shortage of staff, and most of these provider agencies are suffering from the shortage, and then that means that the quality of care is for the individuals is not as it ought to be if there was a full staff on duty. So the judge said, you know, you got to do something about this. Now, the judge has stopped short of actually ordering the state to raise the wages because she says that's not, she doesn't have the authority to do that. But she has let the state know that she's very concerned about it, and so then the state is it's been a couple of years now, and they've been out of compliance, and we keep having hearings with the judge every couple of months, and the state is she kind of calls the attorney for the state on the carpet and demands to know what the state is doing, and that's kind of where that stands, and it's just not ending. It's going on and on and on.
Yeah, people get those letters saying you can apply for services, and then there are no services to be had that are appropriate for that person. So that is a continuing issue. Before we run out of time, Ed, if people are interested in getting your newsletter, where do they do that?
Well, the best way to do it if they have Facebook is just to go on the McManus Consulting page. But they're also welcome to send me an email, and my email address is McManus06, and the spelling is McManus. So it's McManus06@comcast.net. And so if anybody wants the newsletter, it's a free newsletter, and it comes out about once a month, and it kind of brings people up to date on what's going on with developmental disabilities, and just shoot me an email.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Ed McManus of McManus Consulting, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you,
Vicki. Thank you, Ed. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.